This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Tuesday edition of the program. Coming up, we'll speak with Michael Bumpus coming up at the bottom of the hour. Always good to catch up with Bump. And then John Clayton at 4 o'clock, as he is every day. Since the players have the week off, we don't have our player spotlight this week, outside of yesterday, where we had a chance to catch up with Chris Carson, who was great. But for the rest of the week, we don't have a player spotlight, which means we've got El Hombre spotlight today. He'll be joining us for a long segment at 5 o'clock. So rejoice, everybody. Rejoice. All is right with the world. Right, Jim?
All is right with the world when we get El Hombre for a full half hour, Bob.
That's exactly right. So looking forward to that conversation. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. I want to get to some things that Pete had to say. He told the media yesterday, we didn't get a chance to get to this, but he told Shoddy to get Russell back into the middle of everything on offense during halftime against the Vikings. That first half was dreadful. Nothing was going right on either side of the ball. So I guess the question is, and Moore writes this as well, is Pete leaning into the fact that the team's strengths are different than his usual style? Is he sort of giving, I'm not going to say giving into the cooking people, but sort of acknowledging, you know what, we're not who we were with Marshawn. We're not who we were, you know, those years where it was all about run first and the pass was almost complimentary. It's sort of flipped.
Yeah. Well, and Russell was 7 for 7 at half. And then I think he was up to, was it 14 for 14 or 15 for 15?
I think 15.
And then
it was like 100 yards passing or something, but still, yeah.
Well, at halftime, he was 7 for 7 for 40 yards. So, and then, you know, I think there was a spell where I think he went like 5 for 17 or something like that. So, yeah, it was, I don't know. It felt to me, though, like he had opportunities, and he had a couple, because he had a couple of, runs. He had, well, three. It's three times he took off running, and those were times where, you know, it was a pass. And so, I don't know. I mean, I guess I didn't feel like the offense wasn't going through his hands, you know, but.
Yeah, I didn't think he was being stifled or actively
right.
Subverted.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, and, you know, rushing wise, they only had 7 attempts. The thing is, you know, there just wasn't an opportunity to get going in the first half because of the ridiculously long drives by, you know, the Vikings. So, you know, Russ really, he had the ball in his hands 14 times. I'm sorry, 10 times, you know, where obviously the ball's in his hands every play. But, you know, he ran for 3 for 35, 7 for 7. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. It just felt to me like a game where they really needed to get the run game going. Because you saw the sheets of water coming down. You saw that, you know, that there was going to be some opportunities, you know, with the corners on the outside. But this was the number 25 rush run defense. So you thought that there would be some, just nothing was working, really. So it's kind of interesting to hear Pete say that.
Yeah, I think he was giving into the cooking people. It's not like Pete Carroll sits there and listens to cooking people and says, hey, you know, maybe I should do this, but the way Russell Wilson's been playing this year and going 3 and out there, handing the ball off to Carson, and Shoddy sure listened, because I was looking back at the game, and Carson had the nice 29-yard touchdown run that we saw there in the third quarter after the 3 and out, but he only had 2 runs. So, and they pulled him out on the last drive with Travis Homer. I know a lot of people are excited about Travis Homer and his pass-blocking ability, allowing Russell Wilson to find DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on that final drive, but it's still kind of curious that Chris Carson wasn't in there at all on that last drive.
Here's Pete talking about that conversation with Shoddy at halftime.
Well, we just talked about it. We just needed to go. We just needed to go. And that meant, you know, make sure that Russ is in the middle of everything and not being able to make a first down the first drive. Russ never got a chance to get started. Some of his own doing, you know, he got sacked a couple times when we were holding the football back there. But he never got going until the second drive of the third quarter, as you noted. And then from then on, it was, you know, kind of lights out.
wonder what he means, you know, like, get Russ in the middle of everything. Wonder what that means. I mean, it means quit
handing it off so much to me.
Does it? I don't know. I mean, they didn't really hand it off that much, though. I don't know. Did they want him to have more input on the plays that they were calling?
Well, it was 50-50. I mean, there was 7 rushes and there was 7 passes. So it's funny how, and I'm not saying Pete does this, but I know we do this as fans. You want to understand what's going on. So what you start doing is connecting the dots. Mm-hmm. You know, this didn't happen. But, you know, a lot of times if you go back through and look at, you know, what's going on and look at, oh, well, this guy missed a block. Well, this guy didn't execute. And if you were in the game film, certainly it would be explained. You know, if you were able to see exactly what the call was, maybe what the check was, and then, you know, how it's always comes down to that, you know, because you go and look at, like, I was just watching the run by Dalvin Cook. I mean, clearly somebody was not in their gap, you know, and so there's always
gap integrity.
Yeah. One or two things like that happen. Somebody misses a block. Somebody, you know, I don't think their offense all of a sudden stopped working, and it's not like they haven't faced cover two before. And I know that's what they were doing in the beginning. You know, they have the two safeties deep and 5 underneath, and, you know, you're going to try to take away some of those routes, but the offensive line was giving him lots of time. You know, I remember counting 4 seconds, 4.5, where, and he couldn't find anybody.
And that, I think I asked you this yesterday, and Jim, I'd be curious to see what you think, but we were so used to seeing Russell, and I was even critical of him last season at times when he did have a clean pocket, but he would bust out of there like, here comes the rush. I'm like, man, you didn't need to do that. You didn't need to do that. So, but I think he was almost shell-shocked where, you know, I'm consistently under pressure. I'm getting out of here. Now I feel like it's gone the other way at times where he's gotten so comfortable with the pass protection he's been receiving, he holds on to the ball too long. We've seen him take, I bet there's been at least 5 of the sacks he's had because he's just held on to it. You see him. He's standing. He's looking at his first option. He's looking at his second, looking at his third. Then he goes back to his first, and then, boom, he gets sacked. It's almost like he's been spoiled by the amount of time he's had and maybe overestimating just how long they're going to be able to keep that up.
Yeah, I would say this, though. Whenever Russell does that, and I've decided that I'm not going to criticize Russell for hanging on to the ball too long. And the reason I call it much like a pass rusher that jumps off sides. I think we talked about this yesterday. It's the cost of doing business. Russell can make plays,
yeah,
and he knows that he can. And they know he can. So if he's going to hold on to it for too long, well, that's just part of it because a lot of times he makes those plays. He had a spin out on that last drive where he threw a pass to Tyler Lockett. It reminded me of his second, third year in the league, how he would – I remember in the Houston game when they were trying to go 4-0 for the first time, and he had a little – like he did like this little move that was like in the space of like the size of a closet. And he somehow got out of there, and there was, you know, rushers all around him, and he makes a play. You know, a lot of quarterbacks would have just dumped that off or just taken a sack, and he just always wants to extend the play, always wants to give himself a chance right up to the very end. And so if he ever does do that, you know, I'm like, okay, that's just part of it. That's part of it because I'll take him extending a play. I'll take him, you know, trying to make a play. He's just very innovative that way. And you know, really, I think he's the best. I mean, Deshaun Watson's probably the quarterback in the league that holds on to the ball the most. I mean, the longest. Because, and I'm sure the same thing is there, you know, let Deshaun make a play. And it's the same thing with Russell. So I just think, again, you start to go and back and try to connect the dots. Because how do you go from that explosion of offense that they've had in the first 4 games to 66 yards in total net yards in the first half? It's hard to explain. And so everybody wants to, you know, connect the dots, but you know, maybe they made a play here. Like I said, I thought their D coordinator hit on a lot of calls where, you know, you send a blitz off this side and that's where they're trying to run the ball, or that you run a stunt and it goes right into the play. You know, those kinds of things were happening. So, yeah, I don't think that there's any, there was any sort of outage of not running the offense through Russ, but, you know, Pete's the coach, you know, I mean, he's the one that's in there and knows, and, you know, they know about some of the checks, you know, maybe they told him, hey, don't check out of this, don't check out of that. And maybe they did tell him that, and then Russ didn't do it. And in the past, I mean, look, we've heard the stories about him where the microphone goes out in his helmet and he's able to function just fine.
Yeah, I'm just looking back. I mean, they didn't have that many plays, though, in the first half. They had 18 plays. Time of possession, they had it the ball for 10 minutes, and Minnesota had it for 20. And I'm with you, though, Dave. I mean, anytime there's criticism of Russell Wilson, it's not coming from me. I know that. Okay, so the other night I heard that, three of those sacks were on Russell Wilson. They were, you know, coverage sacks, and he had time to get rid of it. And, you know, Russell needs to get rid of it. Russell needs to do this. Russell needs to do it. I just sit there and go, seriously? I just can't ever find fault with the guy because he's so smart. In addition to his athleticism and everything that we've seen, I mean, we watched him for years. And so whenever he gets sacked, I'm thinking, okay, that didn't work out well. But if something had worked out just a little bit differently, that could have been a 30-yard completion. So, I mean, Russell just knows how to make all that magic work, and I'm never going to take issue with it.
Maybe. Well, I don't think pointing out a specific play and saying, yeah, Russell, you got to get rid of the ball there. I don't think you're being unfairly critical and you're now demeaning the way he plays. I think it's fair to say the interception. I was like, what are you doing? If you're going to throw the ball away, throw it away. I mean,
but I thought Jake Heaps had a good – didn't remember yesterday Jake Heaps had a good explanation for that, Bob?
Who?
Jake did on that midday
guru
show.
What does Jake know about Russell Wilson?
Yeah. Because I think he thought – because I was like you. I was like, what's Russell doing? That's crazy. I mean, the guy he was throwing to was out of bounds anyway. Didn't he see that? We could see it on our flat screens. But you know, of course, down there with all the mayhem, it's hard to see anything. But even if he did see Carson out of bounds, he probably did, according to Jake anyway, and I agree with him, that maybe he thought if he threw it in that direction that he'd get a flag on the linebacker for shoving Carson out of bounds.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know. All I know is the ball went to a really bad spot, the arms of the defender. So it was a mistake. Nobody is playing perfect football in this league. Everybody makes mistakes. Nobody, and that includes Russell. I mean, he's awesome. He's brilliant. But I don't think it's unfair to say, yeah, Russell, you got to get rid of that ball, man. Can't take that sack there. I don't think that's being mean or unfair and you know, sort of demeaning.
No, that's cool. I'm never going to say it.
All right.
Well, but I mean, that's
fine. You'll
just
think you'll think it in your head.
No, if you want to talk about the defense, I'll let her rip.
Yeah, you'll jump in with both feet there.
But not, I'm not gonna. I look at Russell Wilson. I'm going, man. Okay, you took that sack. Okay, maybe me watching at home thinks, you maybe should have gotten rid of that one. But boy, all the times that he, and like Dave says, the cost of doing business. I mean, all those times where he makes the plays. So it's hard for me to
not,
even.
Again, not making the claim. This guy, he just doesn't get it. I mean, it's nothing like that. It's just you're isolated. This one player, you got to get rid of that ball, man.
Yeah.
You got to get rid of the ball.
Well, last year when we were complaining about the defense and every other thing, I would stop and have a reset and go, the Seahawks are 11-5.
Yeah. Well.
And then, you know, so the Seahawks are 5-0. But here's why I think everybody's wringing their hands. Because of the defense. Because we've talked about, is this sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
Well, If Russ is going to be 7-for-7 for 40 yards, it's not sustainable. And that's what everybody's freaking out over, I think.
Yeah, and we talked about the idea that it doesn't provide the offense any slack to have an off night, to have a mediocre night, or have a night where the opposing defense somehow slows you down. We talked about that. Like, it is awesome to watch what they're doing offensively, and it's making up for what they're not doing defensively. But at the same time, it's not allowing any slack for a mediocre night or an off night or a night where the defense really plays well or whatever happens in this league, which does happen to every team. It doesn't give you that sort of cushion to say, all right, we can have a night where Russ isn't as sharp or the offense as a whole isn't as sharp because the defense is going to be there to bail them out. They're not.
Couple of texts here, 425. If every player makes mistakes, why do you have to criticize when he makes a few? And then stop being mean to our short, little, cute quarterback. You will hurt his feelers.
Short, cute, little quarterback is what he said?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to disagree with everything you're saying right out of the gate here today, Bob. But they were mediocre Sunday night and won the game. The offense.
Yeah, they were until the final, and the defense was bad until that fourth down stop.
Yeah.
You just had those moments where they came together and it was just enough. They got away with it.
Right. Well, and that's, I think that's what we're going to be this year. I mean, and you're getting Jamal Adams back, so there's the good news. But, It'll be up probably tomorrow, this football one-on-one thing that I did. By the way, Benson Mayowa may be the most underappreciated player. And if you look at the breakdown that I did with Stephen Baril, who does a great job of editing everything. He edits out all of my and you know and oops, I screwed that one up. And you look at Mayowa, so think about him, and this is just what it's going to be. It's going to be takeaways, because I believe they're number two with 8 takeaways. That's how they're going to live. And then making big plays in big moments. Remember they had the 4 fourth down stops? I think they were giving up like 60% on third down to the Falcons, and they went 0-for-4 on fourth down. 2 of those plays were Benson Mayowa. You know, then Dak Prescott getting hit by Jay Reed and the ball's up in the air. There's Benson Mayowa. 2 interceptions against Miami. And then you look at, and one of the plays that I diagrammed, just, I mentioned it yesterday, heroic by him, just hustling over to the sidelines, him and DeMontre Moore. And just, you talk about a game of inches. If those two guys don't converge on Adam Thielen, because I believe it was, because you asked me about Quandre Diggs, he did kind of miss that tackle over there on that little, it was like a reverse play on third down, and this set up fourth down, and that's because of just pure hustle. And by the way, I'm not sure if I mentioned this yesterday, but the hypocrisy of the NFL, DeMontre Moore flies all the way across the field and hits Adam Thielen right in the head with his head. And if he doesn't do that, if he does a hawk tackle, you know, where he grabs the back of his legs, that's a first down and game over. So, but if that plays in the middle of the field and a safety makes that hit and hits him right in the head the way DeMontre Moore did, that's a penalty. He's probably kicked out of the game. But he hustles all the way over there. And then same thing with Benson Mayowa. He drew a holding penalty that put them back a little bit. And then he was instrumental on the fourth down stop. So he did it when they needed to. In the meantime, they're bleeding offensive, you know, or defensive yards. I mean, it's just like last year, and it's just weird. You know, it's just very strange for Seahawks fans to get their mind around. I mean, we had a little bit of an improvement in Miami, 417 yards off of the 497 they were averaging, and then they go and give up 450. But they won the game, and they made plays when they needed to make plays. They got, you know, KJ and DeMontre Moore also with that, you know, the fumble that KJ picked up. So they have playmakers. And that's what's interesting, you know, is that they do have talent on defense. I mean, KJ is playing really well. He's playing at a very high level. And so is Benson Mayowa, and we all know about Jamal Adams. And I think Quentin Dunbar, too. But, you know, they just haven't been able to play it together. So it's a very strange thing to watch, because it just, again, I understand the hand wringing, because if you do happen to have a power outage on offense, you know, where are you going to go?
Yeah, and that game was unlike any other. First of all, they were 0-for-7 on third down.
Yeah.
0-for-7. Then you look at time of possession, and here's where the yardage thing becomes a problem. Is we got a pop-up video again. 39-28 to 20-32.
Say that again?
39-28 to 20-32.
Time of possession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the defense people are saying, well, who cares if you're giving up yards? It's not amounting to points all the time. You're right. Not always does it amount to points, but your defense is going to get gassed. They're going to be out there forever. That's a lot of time for that defense to be on the field. They got to help themselves get off the field, give their offense a chance. I mean, that's, it's weird to win a game like that where you didn't convert a single third down, and you had almost you are almost at a 20-minute disadvantage in time of possession. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, you look at it, and just going back through the game notes, I mean, all these, I think they had a graphic during the game. Minnesota had 5 drives of 10 plays or more. I mean, one of those drives, their second drive of the game, starting out midway through the first quarter, they went 99 yards with it. I mean, so much for Dixon giving you good field position with his punts, it didn't really matter. And then in the fourth quarter, they went 98 yards. So, and Dave, I can see why you'd be mystified. I think everybody else is, too. I don't know if I've ever seen a defense that's this bad that can also be very good at times. It's weird, because usually if you're really good, you're really good and consistently good. If you're really bad, you're probably bad at everything. And yet this defense is one of the league leaders in takeaways. They've got 10 takeaways. Only Cleveland has more with 12. And none of it adds up.
Well, and then also, you know, even though the field position, you know, you think it didn't matter, but it was a 16-yard on average difference, you know. So
in starting position?
Starting position. Yeah. Theirs was the 20, and the Seahawks started on their own 36. So, you know, did I say 16?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay, still
good.
16.
Okay. I want to say, make sure 36 minus 20 is still 16.
It still is.
So, good. Yeah. And so they're doing it different ways. Do I think that's their plan? No, I don't.
I hope not.
They want to stop every play. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be a bad plan. But yeah, they're able to make plays when they want. But and then again, that becomes, is it sustainable? You know, because the offense, if you just put up, you know, a bunch of points and a bunch of yards, that's what everybody's worried about. If something like that happens and then the worst nightmare comes true, or, you know, only 40, 50, 60 yards in the first half, you think, uh-oh. But, you know, are the takeaways. And look, takeaways are about working hard and everything, but sometimes you just don't get them.
Yeah.
Ball doesn't bounce your way. So can you rely on it? I don't know. But the one thing is, they know, they have the talent to get the takeaways, and that's been the case for the last 2 years.
All right, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
We had Tuesday night football. The Titans finally had no positive tests, so they are set to take on the Bills tonight in Tennessee.
All of a sudden, the Bills are this power. We're looking at them on the Seahawks schedule. Seahawks have them in this next five-game stretch, and you're saying, well, out of the five games, the two toughest matchups are the Rams, who look really tough, and the Buffalo Bills. Usually, I'm so used to looking at that team going, well, that should be a win. There's no excuse to lose to that team. It's amazing the turnaround with them.
It is, and, you know, that's going to be a tough trip going out there. I mean, that's going to be another one of those early starts, and, you know, I've never been to Buffalo. And I was looking at the schedule earlier when it was released, thinking, yeah, that'll be cool. I get a chance to go there. Never been to, you know, played in that stadium, never broadcasted, whatever. But, yeah, they've got it going there. Their quarterback's really good. They got a good defense.
Yeah, I went to a game there once, a Seahawk game a long time ago, Dave, and it is a cool place because you drive through neighborhoods, you just see people in yards having the tailgates, and it's really a fun spot. And I bet they're excited. The Bills have been down for a long time. Going into Tennessee tonight, and you're right, that's going to be one of the toughest games on the Seahawks schedule, along with the Rams, and we'll see how the Bills do against the Titans, two unbeaten teams going
Jim,
at it.
Jim, have you been to Green Bay?
I've been to Green Bay, too. Yeah, I was there for
a playoff game. Is that a similar thing? You know, like,
oh, yeah.
That is like set in a neighborhood, and you see people like selling parking on their front lawn and stuff like that.
No, that's
it's cool. A college atmosphere.
Yeah.
The Astros are down 2-0 to the Rays in the championship series after a 4-2 loss yesterday. They get underway at 5:40 today, and we will send you to that game at 6 p.m. when we wrap up.
Let's go, Rays! Let's go, Rays! Oh, I love it! Houston! Choke on it!
Are you enjoying Altuve getting the yips at second base?
Oh, man, I hope he's got the yips. I want to see him throwing that ball anywhere but first base. I want to see him chucking it into the stands, taking out cardboard cutouts, hitting the umpire. I don't care. It's glorious. I'm rooting against every single one of the players wearing that uniform.
You've also not been too happy with the Titans and their behavior. Are you rooting for the Bills tonight?
Yeah. The Titans didn't cheat. They're just potentially screwing things up for everybody who's doing the right thing. Right. So if I'm a player out there, I'm annoyed with the Titans. But the Astros getting all indignant after they cheated. Carlos Correa, who I used to like a lot. Now I don't like him anymore.
You know what the kids would say you are, Bob?
What?
You're a hater.
I am a hater.
You're drinking Haterade.
I have got a big fat glass of Haterade right here with an Astros logo on it.
It's so funny watching the playoffs, though. I just sense there isn't the usual interest in the championship series this year. And the Dodgers and Braves, the other side of it. I was watching the Braves last night, and I'm like, who are these guys? I consider myself a baseball fan, but I don't really watch too much of the National League. But it's still going to be fun, and especially with the Rays taking that 2-0 lead. Hopefully the Astros get swept.
And by the way, Zunino with a home run in that game.
Did you see that one? That was a rocket, too.
All right. Has he ever had a wall scraper, a cheap home run? I mean, he either strikes out or he launches it to the moon.
I love him. And then when they said how far it was, whoever was on the call was like, that was like 577 feet. Should count two.
Yeah, I saw his wife tweeted out pictures of their family. They've got two young kids now, and they're all smiling. They just look so happy. Yeah, you really miss him. Yeah, you don't miss him in the batter's box, but... Everywhere else you'd miss him.
Would you? I know we're late, but would you root against him the way you do Chris Taylor if all of a sudden Zunino's hitting 285
how come?
With 35 bombs a year?
But how come, Jim?
Because I'm a hypocrite. Okay. All right, yeah. I'm a flip-flopper. I'm all the things that people don't want to be.
But are you a hater?
You know, I hate Chris Taylor, but I will never hate Mike Zunino. I just can't. It's impossible.
All right, coming up, Michael Bumpus is going to join us. We will get his thoughts on whether Pete has fully embraced the offense running through Russ and whether DK Metcalf is officially an elite receiver in this league. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. Take us with you if you're out there enjoying the weather, whatever you're doing. You can listen to the show live. You can text. You can watch video, podcast, everything from that app. So download that if you don't already have it.
You can text?
Yeah. I think you can get on the text.
Are you sure?
I think so.
What if you're Thumby McTexter?
Then you got a whole set of other problems to deal with at that point, I think. Joining us now. Oh, how do you transition? You can't. We just bring in Michael Bumpus. Michael, how are you, man?
What's up, guys? I'm doing well. How about yourselves?
We're good. We're good. Hey, is DK Metcalf is starting to catch the eyes of people around the NFL? Obviously, in Seattle, he's a star. But do you think, is he a guy you would talk about like on the verge of becoming an elite receiver? Or are we getting the cart before the horse here?
I think he's on the verge. I mean, you see what he's done this year, 5 games, over 90 catches, the only guy to do that. I'm leading the league in average, eats up about a quarter of the field at a time every time he catches the rock. And then to perform like he did on Sunday, man, I mean, even after, you know, the difficulties that this offense had, when it came down to win a football game, you saw how many targets DK got that last drive. Now, Lockett was still involved in it. He had a catch to kind of set things up as well, but when you have probably the best quarterback in the league relying on you to make plays at the end of the game, you have to say he's transitioning into the star status.
Yeah, what do you think about, and I know, Bump, we know you can answer more questions than just about receivers, but I'm going to ask about a receiver anyway, because Tyler Lockett, he only had 4 targets last week in Miami, and he had that drop. And, excuse me, and I was looking, and the last time he had that few targets was actually last year on Monday night against the Vikings. But do you think anything's going on with him? Because he was targeted 5 times. He had 4 catches. Like you said, there was a big one, 17-yarder on that last drive. But do you think there's something going on there? Or is it just one of those, as a receiver, it's like the flow of the game's just not going your way?
No, I don't think anything's going on. I think you're right. It's the flow of the game. It's the opportunities. You look at the footballs that DK Metcalf has caught. Now, I think about those sideline throws. I think about the slants. Those are the type of plays that DK needs to make for this offense to go. Now, Tyler Lockett is more that deep cross guy, that scramble guy. So he's still showing up when those moments present itself. But I also think that because Tyler Lockett is the guy that gets this thing going, it's easier to double team and bracket a slot receiver, right? You put a linebacker over him, you put a safety over the top, you can take care of him. If you want to try to double DK Lockett, that means that safety's going to have to cheat over the top, over to the one, the number one receiver side. Then Tyler Lockett's going to get opened up a bit. So teams are really being forced to pick their poison. And right now it's just easier to bracket a slot receiver than it is to kind of help out with DK. So once that happens, which eventually teams are going to have to give DK more attention, I expect Lockett's numbers to go up.
Hey, Michael, I think David Moore has done enough. I know he didn't get a catch the other night against Minnesota, but I think he's done enough to be considered the number 3 receiver. But how much do you think it's going to help having Philip Dorsett come back from his injury? And then as an addition to that, are you still wanting Josh Gordon to show up with the Seahawks?
I'm with you. David Moore has done enough. Didn't have a catch last game, but probably almost had one of the best catches of the year if he would have caught that touchdown. Yeah. And then with Philip Dorsett coming back, he's going to have an opportunity to work his way in, but it's going to be harder, man. You see what Freddie Swain is doing. Last 2 games, he has 2 catches. You see what David Moore is doing. He's a factor in the pass game and in the punt return game, and they're giving him jet sweeps. So when you're forcing the ball to a guy, that means you really believe in him. Then as far as Josh Gordon, man, you never want to pass up on a talent like that. But you look at this group and you're like, we're good, man. I mean, I think he will still have an opportunity to show that he can contribute to this receiving core. But right now, I think you have three receivers who can get it done. You have a rookie in Freddie Swain who is getting acclimated to this offense. So it's a good problem to have when you have a guy like Philip Dorsett who's waiting to get his shot, and a guy like Josh Gordon in the wings waiting for him as well. They can make this receiving core better, but there's no need to kind of switch things around once these guys are available.
Hey, Bump, I want to play you this cut from Pete Carroll and just get your impression on what he means by this. He's talking about what he talked about with Shoddy at halftime of that Vikings game.
Well, we just talked about it. We just needed to go. We just needed to go. And that meant, you know, make sure that Russ is in the middle of everything. And not being able to make a first down the first drive. Russ never got a chance to get started. Some of his own doing. You know, he got sacked a couple times when we were holding the football back there. But he never got going until the second drive of the third quarter, as you noted. And then from then on, it was you know, kind of lights out.
When he says, you know, basically he told him he wanted Russ in the middle of everything, what does that mean to you?
In this offense, it means that you are getting Russ outside the pocket. It means that you're calling plays to where he's throwing the football. And that's really what they've been doing all year, right? This is the first time in years where this is probably a pass-first team. So it's easier said than done, because it's really like, okay, if you get the ball to Chris Carson and he rushes for 6 or 7 yards on first down, and then you let Russ throw the football, you give it back to Carson, Carson gets going, you're probably going to go with Carson. You're going to go with the hot hand. But getting Russ going means call the plays that he likes, that he's comfortable with. Now, Russell Wilson has input on game plans. He's at that superstar status to where he's putting in the work and he's shown that he can handle it. So more communication with Russ. Russ, what do you like? What do you want to see? What's your favorite play in this down and distance? So just communicating. And when you can communicate with a quarterback who understands the offense, who understands what his strengths are and what his team's strengths are, it allows you to kind of come up with a game plan within a game plan to let him flourish.
All right, enough of the offensive questions, Bump. Defense, we were just talking about, look, who they are. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like they're talented enough. You can't rely on takeaways all the time, but it seems to be what they have lived on. And then they make big plays in big moments, and I feel like that's just who they are. But what do you make of the defense?
It's a defense that can do enough to help win a ball game. I don't think this is a defense who is going to win a ball game and just shut a team down and keep them under, you know, 150 yards at total offense like we used to see back in the day. No, this is a defense that when presented, when they need to do it, they can make big plays. And for them, big plays look like turnovers. Now, I honestly think this defense got this this offense going this week. You know, they came out the second half, they scored with Will Dissly first, but then after that, two turnovers. You get 21 points in, what, a minute and a half or something like that. That's because the defense had opportunities to make the play, then they made the plays. After that, it's like, all right, defense, you've done what you hit your quota, right? You got your two turnovers. Now this offense has to really start to take over because this is who this team is. So I like this defense. I know it's going to be stressful. I know who they are. I know they can give up a bunch of big numbers when it comes to rushing and throwing the football. But I also know that somebody's going to make a big play. And when you can make a big play and give the ball to an offense who's going to score more often than not, you'll take those contributions.
Bump, as always, great stuff, man. We appreciate it, and we'll hopefully be talking soon.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There you go. Michael Bump is talking Seahawks football with us. Coming up, Pete Carroll spoke yesterday about how critical it is that the players make good choices during this bye week more than ever. How concerned are you about the COVID exposure? We talked about the Titans and what they didn't do. We'll get into the Seahawks situation coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We got the professor John Clayton joining us at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Seahawks have the bye week. Time off is always a scary time for coaches. Right? We've talked to so many coaches. I remember Herm Edwards talking about that. Other coaches just talking about that. That players left to their own devices even for a week. They're just like wringing their hand. They're at home. Wait, that phone rings. They're looking at it like, oh, geez, this is going to be some knucklehead got himself in trouble and he's on the front page of TMZ for something. But it's different now because it's all about COVID and maintaining that discipline, all the protocols that are in place. And we've seen what's happened when teams don't do it. And the Tennessee Titans have altered the schedule because of what they chose to do, right? It's been a massive reshuffling of the schedule because of them and the Patriots to a lesser extent. Again, if I'm a, I don't know how you'd feel, Dave, if you were playing right now, whether you believe in the in mass, don't believe that, it's all irrelevant. These are rules that are in place in order for you to play football. Here's what you have to do. So if you're a guy and your team is following every one of these rules, wouldn't that annoy you to see what the Titans were doing? Even if you think, yeah, I'd want to work out too. I don't blame them. But at the same time, you're sort of jeopardizing what everybody's sacrificing for.
Yeah. I'll say this, though, that kind of needed to happen. And if they're able to get through that and, you know, still get the same number, you know, it affects me too. I was going to get a chance to do the Q13 thing after the Thursday night show, and now it's a Tuesday game, and nobody cares about that, of course.
Why did it need to happen?
Yeah. Because it's kind of a reset of like, okay, and if they're able to come out of it and play the games and everything, I'm just trying to look at it from the positive side, that it kind of refocused everybody. Mm. That, hey, let's get back on this deal, because there is a lot at stake. And look, I said this before when we were talking about it over the summer, that athletes are disciplined people. Now, look, they're young kids and everything, but they're pretty disciplined. They're used to being disciplined. They're used to, and especially now, the guys with their diets and their workouts and their yoga and stretching and everything. I mean, they're, I wish I'd done all of that. I did not watch, you know, what I ate. I just ate whatever I wanted and worked really hard. At one point, I thought that it was beneficial to not have ice cream at night and instead have like a huge bowl of cereal. It's terrible.
Were you having Jack in the Box tacos back then too?
Oh, sure. Yeah, anything.
Dave's going, I got to keep my weight up.
Yeah, when I was like a single guy, like my favorite meal was Kraft macaroni and cheese out of the box. You know, I knew how to make that.
So, with or without ketchup?
Always ketchup. Sometimes with little chopped up hot dogs. Anyway, these guys are disciplined. They know that what's at stake. And also, you don't want to be that guy, right?
Yeah, so I'm, it screws it up for your team.
Right. I'm hoping that that's going to be the case. And if you want to look at it positively, yeah, it's a reset. And Pete even said that. He said, look, you know, that we need to focus on it more now than ever. And Pete's been really big on that. And he's been, you know, which is weird. I felt bad for him getting fined for the mask thing, because Pete's been, you know, his whole mantra has been, I mean, he's such a communicator and he's such a guy that relates to the players and everything. That's why the mask came down a couple of times. I thought they could have given him a break on that, though. But he has been by far the biggest proponent of masks. And as far as everything that's going on down there with the Seahawks, I think a lot of that has to do certainly with Schneider and, you know, management and everything. But also, you know, Pete Carroll very committed to it.
Well, Jim, before you jump in, let me play Pete's comment about, you know, guys making the right choices during the bye week.
This is a crucial time for us. It's crucial because this is the first time we've had a week here where the guys are going to be on their own. Now, guys still have to test every day, so we're still connected in that regard. And I would imagine a lot of guys will work out and they'll be around the facility and all, because they can't go home, they can't take off and all of that. So this is the first for us official bye break ever in COVID season. Okay, so we've never done this before. So what we need is guys to have an extraordinary conscience again in every single step, every moment of their days, orchestrated so that they can't put themselves in harm's way.
See, now I hear that and I picture him saying that to a meeting room full of, you know, all the players in the auditorium, really emphasizing that message. And I picture a young Jim Moore as a member of this team going, yeah, but I still am going to go get those chicken wings at the strip club because they're really good. That'll be fine. That'll be fine. That's not going to be a problem. That's no big deal.
Chicken wings or no chicken wings, Jim?
I assure you, Bob, if I was going to a strip club, it wouldn't be for chicken wings. It's just that
well, that's good
happening.
To know.
Yeah, that wouldn't be happening. Okay, so if you're in your 20s and you have a lot of money, there's going to be temptation this week. But I have you guys been to a bar lately? Or because, you know, I go down to Malarkey's in Issaquah and they've got great food there. I like going there. But I mean, things have changed so much. You can't do anything. I mean, the pool tables are shut down. It's not like these guys are going, hey, let's go throw darts. But you can't do anything at these bars anymore. And they all close at 10. So it's going to help these guys. I mean, there's less of a chance right now that they're going to end up getting in trouble. And then all these rules that they built in, you can't leave town during the bye week. That's a new one the NFL came out with. You can't have anyone but immediate family in your homes. And Pete Carroll, the way he's stressing everything, I think that they've got a good shot. And the other thing that occurred to me, too, is, and maybe you guys will agree, disagree, I'm not sure, but if you're 5-0 like the Seahawks are, I think you'd be more in line with wanting to follow everything you're supposed to do. If I'm one of the Jets and I'm 0-5, I'm kind of going, yeah, and I maybe wouldn't be as inclined to follow the rules.
Well, I hope that they're inclined to follow the rules. And Russell Wilson was on First Take today, and he was asked what concerns him most about playing in such a tough division, and then he said the only thing he's concerned about this season is COVID.
You know, I think that for us, you know, our focus, honestly, has got to be about us and how we prepare. And honestly, if anything worries me or gets me a little bit nervous, is this whole COVID thing, to be honest with you guys. I mean, this whole thing is, you know, it's bye week right now. We can't even leave. I'm normally chilling, kicking my feet up in Mexico or something right now, Stephen A. But, you know, right now I'm in the house and just getting ready for the next week.
So there you go. He's worried about COVID, not the division. It's guys having that week off and potentially making that mistake.
Did you think he was going to say, the thing I'm worried about the most is our defense, man? Of course not.
That would have been a headline.
Yeah. Well, it's such a weird thing. Remember the year that Russell went to Mexico?
Yeah.
And it looked like the cover of a romance novel, you know, riding beaches or horses on the beach and all that. But I remember thinking, because during the bye week, I never wanted to sample anything that was like the off season. And it started in 94, I think, is the first when we started the bye weeks, and there was two of them. But I think I went up to Vail. I was playing in Denver, but you know, took a couple of nights where I went, you know, to a hotel or whatever, did something, but I never wanted to sample that anyway. I just, to me, like, there's an amount of misery that you commit to in an NFL season, you're going to be hurting the entire year. You're going to have a toenail that has fallen off, or a thumbnail, or a, you know, a twisted ankle or a pulled muscle or whatever. And, you know, that was just part of it. And so I didn't ever want to, you know, because at the end of the year, you like to go to like Hawaii or something and just lay around and do nothing for a little while. And I never wanted to do that anyway. So I guess that wouldn't affect me. And it's just different this year. Everything's different. So I don't think it should be that hard to get done. I don't see anybody taking. And also, you know, we talked about this. And with us, you know, we've all said the worst thing to me, I'm not so much worried about getting it. I worry about spreading it. If I were responsible for that, if I was the guy, I'd feel terrible.
Yeah. Whether it's your teammates, your family, your extended family, I mean, it's just, you may come through it with flying colors, your parents, your teammates' parents. I mean, it's just, you don't know. It's just the unknown, and it's much better to err on the side of caution, certainly. All right, coming up, the professor will join us. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, you can start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll have a conversation with John next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.